My name's Michael Finley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Michael.
And I do want to say thank you again, especially to Dave P. and Dave K., who kind of got this thing started a long time ago. This was a meeting that, you know, I came to in early parts of recovery that, you know, meant a lot to me. And, you know, it's a real honor to be here and to be in this chair. So, my first thanks to them and, of course, to God, who brought this message to all of us and inspired those two guys and whoever else was helpful in those early days to get this thing going. Special thanks to Mark, who does the recording and puts things up online, which I have no idea how any of that stuff works, and for just, you know, like I said, putting up with me for all of this time. And Denise, you've been, you know, fabulous. And I also want to especially thank Patty Ellen, who, you know, was instrumental, and Peter, both of them, who were instrumental in getting me to come speak here for all this time. And to the newest home group member, and to Karen, and to everybody who's come out here over the course of the past, I don't know how many weeks, but quite a bit. Thank you. And, it means a lot. And just a reminder that this is just my experience, and this is just, you know, a piece of it, a sample of it. I mean, there's so much to cover when it comes to step 12. And if I had any real solid insight back in November when I was sketching this out, I would have given this step 2 or 3 meetings, because it really deserves that amount of time. I think our big book consists of, like, I'm probably going to screw this up, but it's like 45%, you know, first step and 25% 12 step. So there's a lot of stuff to cover. I'm definitely going to miss a lot of stuff, and I apologize for that. But I definitely prayed. I definitely meditated. This is what, you know, has come to me and what will come to me. And I just ask God to be my voice and my ears and my eyes, help me to hear what it is He wants me to hear and say. So thank you, everybody, you know. And I encourage you all to please come next week to see great speakers here. You're gonna hear great experiences coming forth in the following weeks. And if you're thinking of looking for a home group, I recommend this one. It's a good one, you know. It's even one that I may consider, you know, as I search for these things out myself. So, so thank you. There was a joke my friend Big Jim and I used to laugh about a bit. I guess we had people in our life. Let me know if you have any of these people or have heard this before. Have anybody come up to you and say, I liked you more when you were drinking? You ever hear that? You know, I liked you better when you were drinking, right? Well, Jim and I used to say, you know, because we're egomaniacs, you know, with our first couple weeks, you know, we used to go, no, I liked you more when I was drinking, right? And there's truth to that, you know, on both sides, right? You know, because I needed the alcohol in order to deal with family. I needed the alcohol in order to deal with the job. I needed the alcohol in order to deal with the courts and the feelings and the emotions and the thought processes and everything else, right? But, you know, for the family to be saying this, you know, they liked me better when I was drinking. And if people are saying that to us, it calls to mind some questions about this step in particular. And in particular the part, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. So let's start there, practicing these principles in all of our affairs. You know, if your family liked you better than you were when you were drinking, then you're not practicing these principles in all of your affairs. I mean, you're not trying. And practicing these principles in all of our affairs is not a 12-step thing, right? That's the result of the 4 through 9, 10 and 11, you know, and the understanding and the concession of the first 3 steps. Then, you know, as the result, I'm practicing these principles in all of my affairs. right? I don't wait to get to step 12. I don't wait to get to step 11 and page 88 to start practicing these principles in all of my affairs. I've been put on that mission from the day I walk in here. From the day I walk in here and I'm start to say I want to lead a different life, you know, go out and do things differently. You know, we need to be practicing this stuff all the time. It says somewhere in here, you know, the long period of reconstruction is ahead, right? That really should start at day one in any way that we can. If it means, you know, sweeping up some stuff off of the floor, you know, if it means keeping our mouths quiet and let them yell for a little while, right? If it means, you know, paying for the gas in the gas tank when you've let everyone else do it. Because basically, in early recovery, that's all I'm capable of. Taking out the garbage, sweeping up the chairs, maybe mowing the lawn without breaking it, you know, because I'm the guy who's going to break. I break machines that don't cooperate with me. That's just the way I am, you know. But, you know, maybe mowing the lawn is something I can do. I can shovel the driveway potentially, right? And so, but I should be trying to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So the question is, do people like you now, or do they like you when you were drinking? Am I flicking cigarette butts on the ground, you know, letting somebody else pick them up at the stores, at the bodegas, at the delis, at the churches, outside the AA meetings? When I leave the movie theater, am I leaving the popcorn with the container on the seat or on the floor? You know, did I or my family members or friends like make a mess and leave it all over the place? Right? Am I making a point of cleaning that up? How about the McDonald's trays? Do I leave that for somebody else? Those people don't get tipped to clean up my tray at McDonald's, right? And that's another thing. Am I tipping? Or am I at this side of the game, right, not spending money on booze and other things, stingy, right? And if that's the case, why am I going out to a place that I can't afford and stiff the waitress or the waiter or the or what they call it now, it would be barista, right? Right, the person who's making our coffee or something like that, right? Am I shortchanging those people? If that's the case, maybe I should go somewhere where it's not so expensive. Maybe I shouldn't go out at all. Maybe I should order in. Am I tipping the delivery guy? Practicing these principles in all of our affairs. You know, because if I'm the guy who's leaving the popcorn at the movie theater and the cigarette butts on the floor outside of wherever, right, and not tipping, well, am I really a representative of this power? Am I a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, this is a sacred place, you know? You know, if I'm out there, you know, littering up and down the highway, which is what I did for 20 plus years, and I enjoyed it, I thought it was fun, I thought it was a great thing to do, and I littered all the way up and down the turnpike, right, and every other road for that matter. Well, what if I am that guy, I'm littering, throwing butts outside, whatever, and somebody comes in this room, you know, and I raise my hand, hey, I'm Michael, 10 years sober. Really, you? You know, I'm here to be a representative of God and this power. You know, am I doing it outside of here? That's the simple stuff. That's the stuff I can do as soon as I walk in here, practicing these principles in all of my affairs. Am I driving like a maniac? You know, am I experiencing road rage still? Right? And how am I dealing with that? What does that show up? What does that, you know, look like? Am I driving like I'm the only person on the road? You know, for sure, sometimes I am. Sometimes some of us trade booze for the high of high-speed chases. I have a friend who totally identifies with that. He's got more tickets sober than he does, you know, when he was using and drinking, right? Because he got a high off of that. He got a high off the speed and blowing people off the line and the fancy cars and all this other stuff. Am I still stealing? Is it okay to steal? You know, I mean, what about just the stuff from, the gum from CVS? It's like, what's it, 89 cents? You know, or $1.29 now? You know what, if I stopped stealing it, it probably would still be 79 cents. You know, whatever it is, right? You know, how's my language? You know, do I speak like a man of God? Do I speak like a member of this power? Do I speak like a sober person in Alcoholics Anonymous? Or am I still using, you know, filthy terms and dirty language? That's something that I go in and out of. But it definitely has to show up here. It's a question I have to ask myself, you know? I mean, it's why at some of these meetings they ask you to watch your language, right? Because some person's not may not enjoy that. Some person may be offended by that. Some person might leave, right? Some person may say, well, that's not really spiritual, you to say this and that and whatever and talk about body parts or whatever the heck we do, right? How about taking pills as not prescribed by a doctor? Am I doing that? You know, I could. Yeah, you know, I got the Tylenol codeine. Well, I got the tooth thing. The guy said I can have it. Whatever. Am I taking an extra one? Right. I knew guys when I first came in. There's really some sick towns in New Jersey. In this one particular sick town, there was a guy I'd see at a meeting every day. He said he had 10 years at the time. He told and he this guy popped pills like crazy because he had a back problem. He called himself a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this guy was clearly abusing pills. He told me it was okay to use marijuana. You can use marijuana, just don't drink today. Right? Am I using pills? Am I using other medicines that are not prescribed as a doctor or that are prescribed in an inappropriate way? Am I using NyQuil to go to bed at night when I don't really have a thing? You know, or to avoid going to the doctor to talk about whatever, the natural remedies or whatever the doctor would prescribe. Am I prescribing for myself NyQuil when I'm not sick, when I don't have a cold, when I don't do these things? Am I taking, you know, other people's medicines? This is stuff that I have to look at, you know. That's the questions that I have to ask myself. Am I doing these things? Am I gossiping in AA, at home, at the job, at the church communities, at the synagogues? Am I, you know, at the diner? Am I gossiping? Am I backstabbing? Am I stereotyping? Right? Am I still doing that? Am I still stuck in all those types of things? And do I think it's really cool, like, you know, to be one of the guys in AA at the men's meeting? Let's go around and talk about the black jokes or the, you know, the sexist jokes and things like that. You know, to prove what? You know? Let's say I'm the guy who has a concept of God, who already says those things aren't right, and you want to drag me into all of that stuff. Do I want to be a part of your group? Do I want to be a part of your men's meeting? Does that make you more of a man? Or, you know, does it make me more of one? Am I abusive? Am I abusive verbally? Physically? You know? Am I more abusive without a drink than I was with a drink? It's possible that I was, right? Because eventually, you know, you drink me up enough, I'm like I said to you, I drink, now I like you better, right? Now I can deal with you better. It's a possibility that without a drink, I get worse. I get more verbally abusive. I get more physically abusive because I don't have anything else, any other coping mechanisms. I get worse, you know? And am I the guy showing up, kicking the dog, stealing, you know, cheating the taxes, you know, slamming the doors because dinner isn't ready when I get home. You know, because the dog wants to go out and I want to sleep for an extra hour. Practicing these principles in all of our affairs, what does it look like in my life now? What does it look like in yours? Right? And remember, it doesn't matter what day you're on, 3 weeks, 2 days, you can start practicing these principles in all of your affairs right now. Right? If you want to get better, that's what they're talking about. Change. Change of thought, change of words, change of actions. I don't have the power to change all of those things at once or necessarily at all, but I can do certain things. There's certain things I can do. You know? I've been granted the gift, you know, of hitting the brake on the brake pedal. You know, my sponsor used to say, get in the penalty box. If you got a problem with the people on the road, get in the penalty box. You know, sit in the right lane for, you know, 10 minutes. You know, let everybody go in. You got a problem with this guy who cuts in and whatever, you got a problem with the cabs and the taxi people, I do. It's on my inventory. Get in the penalty box. You got a problem? Get in the penalty box. I'm capable of hitting the brakes. I'm capable of standing at a red light. Right? You know, obeying traffic laws. These are the simple things in early recovery. No matter where we are, we can be practicing these principles in all of our affairs. As we go through a four-step experience, a fifth-step experience, and some nine-step experiences, I'm able and capable of practicing a lot more principles in all of my affairs. But right from the get-go, we should be doing this right from the beginning. So there are worthwhile questions no matter where we are in this process. Page 82. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Is that me? Is that me without a drink? Am I still doing that without a drink? Am I still, you know, cheating, manipulating, trying to make things happen? Am I still a tornado in my house, you know, dry in these meetings? Heart's broken. Am I still doing that without a drink? Sweet relationships dead as a result of my alcoholism without a drink, as a lack of practicing these principles in all my affairs. Have affections been uprooted by my behavior, sober, in Alcoholics Anonymous? Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Is my home in turmoil because of my selfish and inconsiderate habits? Today, right now, 4 months sober, writing inventory. I understand. It says here, we are going to fail a lot of times. But if our motives are right and if we keep trying, you're going to see improvements in these areas. And very clear. We feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. Am I that person? Am I that person in AA walking around saying, no, it's okay, I'm not drinking.
Hi, Denise.
She's going to love me. You know what I mean? Oh, no, you know. I can talk to her any way I want. You know, I'm not drinking. That's enough. You know, my kid. I don't need to do much more with my kids. I'm not drinking today, right? You know, my kids. It doesn't matter what I used to do. It doesn't matter that I yell and scream and do these other things. Is that me? Am I that person feeling like I don't need to do anything else other than just not drink? Or do I? You know, recognize, you know, that I have this thing called alcoholism. And that if I don't do these things, I am going to drink again. If I'm the real deal alcoholic, that's the truth. If I believe I'm a real deal alcoholic, I'm going to practice any sort of principle that I may be able to handle today. If it means holding open a door. And no, you don't deserve a medal for that. Right? What did you do for your sobriety today? Oh, I held the door open and I said hello to a person. No. That's maybe what you did to have a relationship with your fellow man to make a little bit of a change, but it may not be what you've done for your sobriety today. That's not enough. You know, there's 12 steps. You can start practicing these principles in all of your affairs by holding a door open for somebody, saying thank you, please, may I, you're welcome, you know, and also act like those words. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. On page 83, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. And it says, who needs to take the lead? Me. I need to take the lead. Not my family, not my wife, not my girlfriend, not the kids, me. I have to take the lead. Right? I have to start this period of reconstruction. You know, God willing, as a result of me practicing these principles, maybe they'll want to change too. Maybe they'll start treating me differently. But I can't. That can't be my motives either. You know, I have to take the lead and then accept whatever, however the chips may fall as a result of that. All right? Page 127. I don't know why this page is marked. 127. What happens there? 127... Since the home has suffered more than anything else, it is well that a man exert himself there. He is not likely to get far in any direction if he fails to show unselfishness and love under his own roof. It's telling you right now, you are going to fail in any direction, with a drink or without. You're not going to go much further staying sober. You're not going to get you're not going to do much better, you know, avoiding a drink or having a drink, if you do not bring this stuff home. Unselfishness and love under your own roof. What does that look like? What does unselfishness and love look like in your, to you in your house? Where am I still being selfish and lacking love? To the people in my own house, my own roof. And we know that there's difficult wives and families. Trust me, I know. I'm from one. You know, but the man who is getting over alcoholism must remember he did much to make it so. He must remember that. It's up to us, the men and the women who are alcoholics. So, am I practicing these principles in all my affairs? Have I had a spiritual experience? Have I had a spiritual experience? If I haven't had a spiritual experience, everybody, we shouldn't be sponsoring people, right? Right? Because we don't have anything to pass off. And, you may not be sure. All right? Let's take a look at what it's not. All right? On page 125, it says, at the beginning of recovery, a man will take, as a rule, one of two directions. He may either plunge into a frantic attempt to get on his feet in business. Is that me? I'll tell you this. A couple days sober, I was working 80 hours a week at a charity. Not making a lot of money, but I was 80 hours a week. I was working. I didn't know what else to do. But I answered the phones. I worked at the computer. I stayed there for 80 hours, right? Not bringing home a lot of money either. You know, I was just getting benefits, just getting a doctor's whatever thing. Right? But is that what I think I need to do? You know, do I think like, oh, I just need to get my job back? Right? It's a common trap. Right? We think it dangerous if he rushes headlong into his economic problem. The family will be affected also, pleasantly at first as they feel that their money troubles are about to be solved, but not so pleasantly as they find themselves being neglected, as my parents did, as my girlfriend did, as probably many other people in my family and my friends did. Dad, the alcoholic, may be tired and preoccupied by day. He or she may still have small interest in the children and may show some irritation when reproved by his delinquencies. And if they're not irritable, they may seem dull and boring, not gay and affectionate as the family would like them to be. Mom might complain of him being of lack of attention, and they're all disappointed. And I often let him feel it. And they often let him feel it. Beginning with such complaints, a barrier arises. He is straining every nerve to make up for lost time. Listen to this. He's straining every nerve to make up for lost time. I see it all the time. Right? People, maybe they have to go away. Right? They have to go to a psych ward for 2 weeks. They have to go to a rehabilitation thing for 30 days, 60 days, whatever. And as soon as they get back, they want to make up for all the lost time. All of a sudden, they forgot all of the stuff that they taught you. You forgot about doing the step work with the sponsor. All of a sudden, it's like, I need to get this right. I need to make this right. Let me get the job. Let me go get the money. Let me go pay the rent. Let me go take care of the mortgage. Trying to make up for lost time. You can't do that. There's no power. You can't do it. Nobody can make up for lost time in one day. You know, if you've lost 30 days, it might make sense that it takes another 30 days, depending on the level of damage you did. But if you do the type of level of damage I do, it's a lifetime thing. He's straining every nerve to make up for lost time. Don't do it. It's a trap. It's dangerous. It says right there, we think it dangerous if he rushes into the economic situation. We think it's dangerous if you go after to try to fix your money situation. You know? He is striving to recover fortune and reputation, and he feels he's doing very well. Am I that person? Am I that person? In AA, taking a look at, thinking that job and status, I'm doing well. Right? On page 127... We found we could not place money first. For us, material well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded. Never. Never preceded. So it doesn't mean, like, if I go chasing money, I don't get a spiritual answer. The spiritual answer has to come first. These other things may come second. And that's not important. Am I chasing the money? Am I chasing status? Am I chasing these things? I'll tell you what, I hear it all the time, right? Anybody else hear it? Let me know if this sounds familiar to you. Oh, I drank, I threw up on myself, I went to bed with Bob, and I went to bed with Betty, and I woke up with Bob. Ha, 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 wasn't that great? Two DWIs, you know, stint for attempted manslaughter, and, you know, lost a wife, kids, all this other stuff. But thank God to AA, you know, I got Pam Anderson as my wife. I'm now just graduated law school. And if you all wash your hands, you can all come outside and smell the interior of my Jaguar. Mm. Right? Have you heard that? You hear that in meetings? Gives you the idea that the thing that they're after, the God that they're chasing, is money, car, and status. And if you're that guy, it's dangerous. If you're a real alcoholic, you may drink again. In all likelihood, you will if you're a real alcoholic, without a spiritual answer. These things never come first. Am I doing that? Am I comfortable with what I have? Am I thankful for what I have? Or am I worried about what's going on across the street? And if somehow, do I think in these rooms, by measuring up against that guy, I'm not any good? That's what he wants you to do. Listen, I did high school. It sucks. I don't want to go back. I've been doing it. Listen, it got me drunk for the next 20 plus years. And it happens here in AA too. These rooms. All of a sudden, you know, who's the spiritual one? Who's the one who says more prayers? Who's the one who's got the money and the Pam Anderson and whatever? Because that's what we think it's all about. Am I chasing this stuff? It says here, the material always follows the spiritual progress, not the other way around. Never does it precede it. Okay. So, on page 25, and you know, I'm not here to tell everybody who's an alcoholic and who isn't, right? That we have to decide for ourselves, right? That we have to decide for ourselves. I will tell you this, if you go to 90 meetings in 90 days, it doesn't make you an alcoholic. Just want you to know. And if you don't do 90 meetings in 90 days, it doesn't mean you're an alcoholic either. Okay? There is a definition of what a real alcoholic is in our literature. I highly recommend you have somebody who's had an experience with the identification process of our literature to find out your truth. 90 meetings in 90 days doesn't figure that out. Right? Making coffee at the coffee pot doesn't make you an alcoholic. Okay? And it's possible for the guy who puts down a drink and starts getting a job and he's driving a Jaguar, goes to law school and everything's great, but doesn't do any of this other stuff. It's possible he's not a real alcoholic. But he's calling himself one. So, page 25, lower down the page. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. What does that mean? It means that if I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I'm hearing anything other than how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience, I'm hearing a middle-of-the-road solution. If I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I'm hearing anything that has nothing to do about how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience, 12 steps, ladies and gentlemen, if I'm not hearing anything about how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience, I am hearing a middle-of-the-road solution. And if you're a real alcoholic, a middle-of-the-road solution is not going to work for you. It's not. You know, getting a fourth step and not doing a fifth step is not going to help you. 90 meetings in 90 days is not going to help you. What it might help you is to... And it's... You're not going to be able... You may not be able to identify yourself this way. You might just be able to meet somebody who's had a spiritual experience who will help you through the identification process to find out what a real alcoholic is, to find out if that is your truth, and then to help you through the rest of the process to get out of it. right? Increases my chances of hearing a solution, God willing. But it doesn't make me an alcoholic. So after having a spiritual message experience, we carry this message, right? Not the middle of the road message, right? The one that has a solution, right? The one that brings us to how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience as a result of the steps. That is the message that this book is talking about. That is the message that's on that little clip, that board right there, mm-hmm. right? That's the message. Anything else is not the message. Mm-hmm. Sorry. This is what the message also is not. Page 100. Okay. Down at the bottom of page 100, the very last couple lines. People have said we must not go anywhere where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures with showing drinking scenes. Anybody hear any of this stuff? Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. Oh, you can't go where alcohol is served. Right? People, places, and things. Right? You hear it all the time. Right? Yep. Need new places, new people, new things. Mm. Well, I'm sorry, but everything about me is people, places, and things that lead me to alcohol. I think I told you right, today, right? The green, that makes me drink, right? For sure. You wearing green on a day like today, trigger, I'm drinking, doesn't, right? And I'm actually, if you're wearing green on February 28th, I'm already starting to drink, getting ready, let's go for it. Right now, I'm starting to make the hotel plans, right? You know, because we're, you know, that's what I did on St. Patrick's Day. You know, I started off with a hotel room when I was 18, then it went to 2 connecting hotel rooms, then it was 3 connecting hotel rooms, then I'm buying a condo. I'm renting a condo for a weekend for St. Patrick's Day, you know, drink fest, you know, like a total annihilation of self. So yeah, by February 28th, you're rearing green, I'm ready, let's gear up, lady, let's go, let's do it, right? So for me, I would have to avoid people wearing green. Right? That's the truth. Right? And you can't have it in your homes. Right? You got to stay away from your friends who drink. Boy, what a lousy friend I am. You dealt with me drinking at your house, probably urinating all over your bathroom floor, not cleaning it up like a jerk, throwing up, causing scenes, knocking on the door after 2 o'clock, waking up your family, neighbors, all that other stuff. And now I go to AA, sorry, we can't be friends anymore. How ridiculous is that? How about this one? Can't watch movies with alcohol. Right? Can't go into bars. Friends must hide their bottles if they go into their houses. So, right? My real friends, I'm not talking about my drinking buddies. I'm not talking about my contacts. Right? I'm not talking to people who were only interested in doing certain things with me. You know, the plants, the powders, the liquids, and the substance. I'm talking about the real friends, right? Who loved me for who I was, drunk or sober. Right, they were like, "Hey, put this away. Finley's coming over. Put this away. You know, let's open the drawer. Put the stuff. You know, put the plate. You know, in the drawer. Put the glass products off to the side. Finley's coming." Let me tell you, I told my friends, I said, first of all, guys, I'm the one who has to change, not you. I'm the one who has to change, not you." And I said to them, "In all actuality, if you hide what you're doing, you're going to make me uncomfortable. If you're not who you really are, you're going to make me feel uncomfortable." Now, am I saying if this is your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to go over your, hang out with all your buddies who are drinking? Mm. No. Maybe you should get with one of us and talk about, you know, how you can stay sober for the rest of the night to get to the next meeting. Or maybe if you really want what we got and you're ready to make some changes in your life, maybe we can get you right into inventory or step work today. Mm. If that's your situation, that's what we have to offer here. I'm not recommending you, you know, first couple days go out and doing these things. But this book is telling me we must not avoid these things. So how does this come out that this becomes the message that people are carrying around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? Mm-hmm. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Now that's totally insane, right? If I'm an alcoholic, that's all I'm doing. is thinking about alcohol, right? A mental obsession is going to lead me back, right? If I'm a real deal alcoholic, I have that mental obsession. How do I have any idea of how to stop thinking about alcohol? That's ridiculous. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. And, just so you know, Alcoholics Anonymous here, page 101, an alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. So if you have to do this, and I had a sponsor, he roped me in, great guy, beautiful man. I mean, he a really beautiful man. He had 7 years of sobriety. I had tickets for a Yankees game, right? And I used to go to the Yankees game, 12 o'clock in the afternoon for the 7 o'clock game. I'd sit in the lot and get loaded all day long, right? After the game, I'm getting loaded all night long. The guys at Yankee Stadium in those days gave me the lock to lock up the parking lot, right? It's before the new stadium and all the corporate stuff that came in. The guys gave me the lock to lock it up. So when the sun comes out and I saw the cops switching gears, I'm out. Right, that's when I would leave Yankee Stadium. Going to a Yankee game, that's what that meant for me. It was like a 20-hour event, And it was me, my car, my grill, my cooler, and everything else that comes with it. I had the perfect spot, everything, in my head. This is the spot you got to be in. So I had to get there at 12 for the spot. Right, crazy. So this guy, I said, I got tickets for a Yankee game. I guess I should go with one of you AA guys. Otherwise, I'm probably going to get loaded, whatever. He's like, well, do you have any family members that you can go with that you won't drink? I'm like, well, I guess I probably could go with my father. I could probably have to stay sober around him. Anybody else? Yeah, maybe my brother. All right, we'll call them. If they can't go, we'll go. Dad said no. Brother said no. Called the sponsor. He goes, hey, listen, just want to let you know, Thursday night I got a commitment. I said, that's okay, man. The game's on Wednesday night. He says, Michael, I got to be totally honest with you, man. I can't go to an AA meeting and not get sick. He goes, I throw up. I panic. Even if I go there on business and we go to the places outside and around the stadium, I'm spending the whole time throwing up in the toilet. He goes, I know guys who can't go to Yankee Stadium unless they have busloads of alcoholics go out and get entire sections so that they could feel okay going to a baseball game. Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if that's what getting sober promises me, I'm still drinking. That guy right there told me, very clearly, I don't have what you want. Because if I have to now all of a sudden be a community organizer in order to go to a Yankees game, right? And guess what? I had reasons. I had I did busloads for my company to go out to Yankee Stadium, right, before AA, and I'm getting thrown out of Yankee Stadium. So even when I had every reason to not stay sober, and I had a whole bunch of company people, a place where I got drug tested in order to be worked there, they're kicking me out for those reasons. Kicking me out of Yankee Stadium. Had to sneak back in, right, on the company time. So there's no guarantee that even if you gave me, a couple hundred of you guys, I'm going to stay sober anyhow. That's not my experience as it is. We feel that anybody who can't meet these needs still has an alcoholic mind, and there's something the matter with his spiritual status. Therefore, you have not had a spiritual awakening. Can you have a spiritual awakening outside of AA? Absolutely. The literature talks all about it, right? But it's not what we pass on here, right? These things can go hand in hand. If you have some spiritual stuff outside, we got some spiritual stuff inside, bring it together, probably make a great experience for you. Right? But what we pass on is this here, 12 steps. Right? If I'm feeling this way, I do not have a spiritual experience to give. Stop here. In fact, if you're at my meeting, unless we're talking about the first step and that's your experience, I want you there. But you're not coming to my meeting and we're not doing a 12-step talk. I'm sorry, but you can't come. You can listen, but you're not sharing this message. Our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism, not just the booze, all the other stuff that comes with it, the fear, the resentment, the anxiety, the wanting to die, right? Which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. So, any scheme to try to get me to stay away from temptation is doomed to failure. Alcoholics Anonymous, the message. Any of that other stuff is not this message. And please don't bring it. And if you want this experience, if you want this experience, or if you're not sure if you had it, I suggest you do this. Go to page 18 and take a look for a guy like this, or a girl like this. Page 18, third paragraph. This is what to look for in a sponsor. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. So the question is, first of all, if you've been around here for a while, am I this person? Am I armed with the facts about myself? Can I win the confidence of another alcoholic within a few hours? It says, until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. The person who's making the approach has had to have had the same difficulty, right? Ask yourself two questions. If I have a sponsor, is this my sponsor? Or if I want to be a sponsor, am I this? All right? Did I have the same difficulty, right? Do I know what I'm talking about? Does my whole deportment shout at the new guy or girl that I got a real answer? That I'm not holier than now, right? That nothing whatever, except for a sincere desire to be helpful to them, fees to pay. Am I making the sponsees come over and paint the house? I hear about that happening in out in California, right? Sponsees, load them in the truck. You know, we're gonna go take care of my back. Don't worry, you're doing service. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're being used. You know, a real man who has this solution sees the dignity in you, sees the worth in you, sees the love in you, and attaches to that. You know, and if you are going to paint their house, they're paying you. You know, it's not a condition of sobriety. It's not a condition of sponsorship. Right? But is your sponsor doing this? Right? Any axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. Sometimes my sponsees get stuck with that one. These are the conditions we find most effective. And when I take a sponsee to this, I say to them, if I fail to be any of these things, please tell me immediately. And not because of any other reason except for to save my life. And I say, and also, if I continue to not be these things, do yourself a favor and get another sponsor who is like this. There's no ego here. You be saving my life if you drop me and go find someone else to save yours. But if I tell everybody when I get to this point in the book, if I'm not this, hold me to this, please. And then here's a promise. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again, right? A guy crippled, blind, can't see, right? Unable to walk. After having this experience, is able to see the truth, has an experience with the truth, can recognize the truth when they hear it, and is no longer a cripple to his past or fear of his future, but stands firmly in the present, able to help another person, and sees the worth of himself. Able to pick up their beds and walk again. Promise. One of the greatest promises in this book. Right, and it's on page 19, which is great, because I need them right from the get-go. All right. Now, why should this person, and why is this person, this ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, why is he doing it? Right. Well, on page 89, it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. My sponsor had me right here, promise. Nothing. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It says it works when all other measures, when all other activities fail. So that's saying to me that there is a time where writing inventory is going to fail. There's going to be a time that making amends is going to be a failing. That praying and doing the 10-step and all these other things that, you know, I'm still going to have the uncomfortable, that restlessness, that other thing. And this is my experience. Nothing makes me feel better other than when I'm sitting down with another person. And I may not want to sit with that person from the night before, from the morning before, from the morning of, to the minute they walk in. But something happens by the time they leave where I'm okay. That feeling, that fear, that anxiety, that whatever is gone. And I can't explain it other than this works when all other measures fail. That's my experience. And it's the greatest part of my day, really, of my life. And I wouldn't have imagined it. You know, as I was like this guy, I kept seeing this vision of like a light way out there. And in that like light was a guy. And I just kept having these visions and these dreams and these thoughts about this guy at the tunnel, you know, in the light. And I knew that that guy was me. And that every day I was trying to get towards that guy. This guy that I was supposed to be, this guy that I wanted to be, this guy that God wanted me to be. But if you were asking me during this time, I would have said, well, it's by turning my will over to the care of God. Or that it was by writing inventory, or doing the fifth step, or making amends. Or lots of prayer and lots of meditation, and lots of other books also, or working a real good, rigorous 10-step. But something has happened inside of me that makes me feel okay being me, nothing more than actually sitting down with another person. And I don't get it. I can't explain it. And there's times where there are people who drink more than me, who've done things more than me, who may be more violent than me, who may have longer criminal records than I. But it says, you know, no matter how far down the scale I've gone, I'll see how my experience can benefit others, that every dark cranny and thing in my past is what is going to benefit this person. And there were times in recovery I'd say to my sponsor, like, oh, I don't know if I can help this guy. You know, at this point I'm like 38, this guy's 60 something, you know, and he's the real deal drinker and whatever, and I don't know, you know. And my sponsor would say to me, who the hell do you think you are? Who the hell do you think you are? Right? He's like, you don't get this guy sober, right? Right? All you are, he'd say, is a paper boy. That's all you are. You're a paper boy. You're here to read the pages, the words off the page and give it to him and tell him the directions. He or she goes out and does that stuff. They have the experience. Who the hell do you think you are? Read the book. Highlight, underline, give the instructions. It's between them and God. You don't get anybody sober. So, here are the 12-step promises. Okay, that's one, right? Nothing will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And like I said to you, my experience is, you know, I'm a busy guy. I work a lot of days. I try to do family stuff to practice these principles and stuff like that. I travel. I drive all over the place for a meeting. I drive all over the place for work and stuff like that. And sometimes I only have one day off. Like right now. Right now, like I sit with this meeting for most of my day. I do some spiritual stuff in the morning and I sit with this meeting. My only other free day is Saturday, and I got alcoholics coming in from either 12 or 2 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night. And you know, I'd rather watch the Yankees game. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather, like, you know, talk to Mike for a couple hours or hang out with him or even go to a meeting, right? But me sitting down with, and let me tell you, when I get out of work on Friday night and I get home at like 4 in the morning, I am beat emotionally and everything like that. I sleep harder than I ever have than with the job that I get. What I could really use on a Saturday morning is another 8 hours of sleep. You know, when I roll out of bed and I do the prayers and all this other stuff, and yeah, whatever, you know. But I'm telling you, something happens over the course of that day where I'm cool, I'm free, I'm energized, and I'm ready to roll at 11 o'clock at night. And I feel good. You know, let's write some inventory, go to bed, my head hits the pillow, great. So on page 97, you will find the 12-step promises. Anybody familiar with these?
Yes.
All right. So you got to ask yourself, are these happening to me? Okay. First, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. You know, a lot of this book, when in the original manuscript, was written like you, right? You better find God now or you're going to fail. Half measures are going to avail you nothing, right? You might think you could find an easier, softer way. We don't think you can. That's the way they originally wrote this. But then they softened it up to say things like, we don't think you can. We tried to do it this way. We found that half measures didn't do us anywhere. They softened it up. But here, they're saying helping others is the foundation of your recovery. They didn't take it out when it came to this stuff. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. So opening the doors for the nice lady is not enough. You know, taking a guy to a meeting once in a while, once a week is not enough. You have to act a good Samaritan every day if need be. Now, here are the 12-step promises. Ask yourself this. If I'm in this point where I'm sponsoring or I've been given the go to sponsor people, am I experiencing any of these promises? It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. Am I experiencing those things? Or am I telling the sponsee or the potential person, well, I got some business stuff going on. I don't know if I can really help you right now. I go to bed at 9 o'clock. I really can't take phone calls past 8:30. Am I experiencing a great interference in my pleasures? Am I experiencing interruptions in phone calls with my business? And in some cases for me, I've allowed myself to not progress in my business so I can spend time with alcoholics. I've been in that position in recovery too, where I've just said, no, I've got 5 or 6 guys right now. I need to meet them these hours. If I take this job, I'm working an extra 10 hours a week. Can't do it. I'm going to stay right here. Whatever you need. I don't care. I'll be the dishwasher. I got sponsees right now. It may mean sharing your money or your home. Are we doing that? Or, you know, does he smell too bad to bring over for dinner? You know? Or, I don't think he's worthy of the money. You know, at the diner or whatever it might be. Am I counseling frantic wives or relatives? Am I making many trips to the police courts or the psych wards or the hospitals, the jails and the asylums, or the rehabs or the detoxes? Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or the night. Are you experiencing that? Your wife may sometimes say she's neglected. Is she or he? You got any alcoholics coming over and smashing your furniture, home, or burning a mattress, or having a dog go to the bathroom on your mattress? You may have to fight with him if he's violent. Sometimes we have to call a doctor or administer sedatives under his direction. Right now, it's Narcan. Anytime you may have to send for police or another time you might have to send for the cops or an ambulance. Occasionally, you'll have to meet these conditions. Am I meeting these conditions? Or am I, you know, I can start sponsoring people when I get back from a vacation in July. Right? If God's bringing somebody to my life now, am I telling God, no, I can't do it now, God? It's going to interfere with too many of my things. Did God say that to you when you were banged up and when you needed help and you were suffering and you were in pain? Did he say, no, I'm sorry, I'm busy with the Yankees fans right now. Screw you Red Sox fans, I'm not helping. You know what I mean? Right? Or did he love, you know, you get it. You know? Or is his love to everybody? Right? Right? So, am I experiencing these 12-step promises in my life? And then, you know, how do I do this? Right? Well, you know, I don't have a lot of time. Everyone's got their own sponsor. Their sponsor's always taking them through in a very particular way. So what I recommend is pass on the experience that your sponsor gave you. If you've had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps and you're working in 10, 11, and 12, do what your sponsor had you do, right? If it's working for you, pass it along. But if you're new at this and you got some kind of new things coming up ahead, one of the things it says is to get a good idea about the person, right? Find out a little bit about them. Sometimes you can find out about them by another AA, right? Or by the doctor or the nurse or the family member or whatever, or find out from them. What brought you here? How much were you drinking? What made you come to AA? What makes you think this is all right? I know it sounds a little crazy. What's this whole thing with the God thing? Is that all right with you? It's okay if it's not, They give directions on how to go about this, right? But it says, get an idea of where the person is. I think that's on page 90, right? Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his backgrounds, and the seriousness of conditions, and his religious leanings. You need this information to put yourself in his or her place and to see how they would like to be approached if the tables were turned around. Meet them where they're at. Am I talking down to my sponsees? Am I talking down to that newcomer? I probably had a little bit of that. I didn't realize it in the beginning, after having this experience, I see things in a totally different way. I got to remember, he may want to be talked to in a different way, For example, my experience was the guys all gave me their phone numbers at my very first AA meeting. And I walked into this meeting. It was a 12 and 12 meeting. And just one guy goes like this. Right? And he's pointing to me, right? And then he goes to everybody else, right? And one. And for whatever reason, these guys knew. And I came in with a nice button-down shirt or pants and shoes and whatever, because I was at a PR in those days. But these guys knew. They smelled me coming, Like, they knew I was a new guy. And I guess they were supposed to be on 6 and 7 that week, or step 6 that week, but they went to step 1 because they saw me, right? And they're like, new guy. Right? And then everybody told their experience and they went right at me, that uncomfortable situation. And I made it through the day. But I tell you what, I felt every one of those people loved me, at that meeting, And but they gave me the book and they gave me the phone numbers and all this other stuff. But the one guy who touched me was Ed. Ed took my number. Ed called me the next day. Ed asked me for a ride. Ed asked me for a ride for the next 30-something days. Ed wound up being the guy that I was like, can you sponsor me? He's like, no, I can't. He's like, I can help you get to one. He was in his 9-step. He wasn't finished. He felt, he was in a certain place, right? Meet a person where they're at. For me, where I was at was, I ain't calling you characters. I mean, you all seem like nice guys and everything, but you guys got all your stuff together. I'm too ashamed to tell you my stuff. Ed, he was tough. This guy went hunting and he beat people up. He was tough. I for whatever reason, I wanted to be like him in that respect. I wanted to be macho and all this other stuff. And I got along with him. But he called me. And he called me every day. And he asked me, what meeting are you going to tomorrow? What meeting are you going to the day after that? Well, I go to this one and this one. Why don't you come by and pick me up? I'll make you something to eat and we'll go over. And that's what he did for me. He is what he calls himself an AA Sherpa, right? The Sherpa is that guy who, takes you up the mountain, but the rest of the way you have to kind of do it on your own. Well, Ed, was the guy that got me, into my sponsorship lineage, who got me up to this solution and this path. And I'll never forget the day when I said, when I started clicking things with Ed, I said, hey, Ed, I said, I just went to this meeting out in Colts Neck, whatever. I found out something, Ed. What is it, man? He goes, there's a solution. He's like, yeah, I know. Where did you hear that? Let's go, whatever. And I was like, 2 days, they're having a meeting up in Union. Some guy's going to talk all about the solution for 12 weeks. Let's go. Next thing I had a sponsor. I had a home group. It was called a Vision for You group in Union, New Jersey. And it's now in Springfield, New Jersey, Thursday nights from 7:30 to 8:45. Mm-hmm. It's a great meeting. It's been my home group for 10 plus years since. That, you know, I had one sponsor in there, got another sponsor in there, found myself sponsoring guys in there throughout time. But there are Sherpas too. You know, if I got 30 days of sobriety and I got a little bit of first step knowledge and understanding of the doctor's opinion, I can share that experience with the next guy. I don't need to be floating on a mountaintop in order to share that with the guy who just walked in. I could tell him about the prayers and the other different things that I'm doing. So it says, you know, get an idea about what it's all about, right? Then it says very clearly, you know, if we think they're kind of open to the experience that we've had, we let them have this book. Right? Take the book. You know? Then, after reading the book, we go over to them. Well, what do you think? You ready to do this? And if they're excited, great. If they're not, take it easy. He just helped you stay sober for 3 days, or whatever it was. That's what the book says. And that's what my spot, that guy in Union, New Jersey, eventually, what he had me do was write down, you know, I think I mentioned it in the first week, write down your unmanageability from your first drink to your last drink. Then he said, now I want you to write down the unmanageability from your last drink until today. Well, he found out a lot about me. Right? He found out a lot about me. He found out, and he gave it term limits, right? 2 pages and less, right? You know, because he knows, you know, the drama that we want to bring to the table. And under 2 pages, right? He found out a lot about me. Then he gave me the book. He said, I want you to highlight wherever there's a must or a should. He gave me very clear directions, right? A must means you must. A should looks like this, right? Let's say you're jumping out of a plane. You got a parachute on your back, right? You're flying. You're about to hit the ground. Now, you don't have to pull the ripcord, you know? He says, but you should. Right? And so as I'm reading those first 164 pages, must, should. He said, get it done in a week. Right? Because that showed my willingness to do this thing. And within 1 week's time, he knew a guy, how sick he was, how crazy he was. Right? He knew how crazy he was with a drink, how crazy he was without a drink. And he knew that there was some willingness. And I was like, Pete, there's 92 musts and whatever shoulds. And Pete probably didn't know himself. He's like, yeah, that sounds about right. But, you know, we went, you know, he already knew some willingness. Okay, come to my house or meet me at the home group this day. We're going to start doing these things, right? And he followed those directions textbook with me. That's the way he had done it with me. I do some things a little bit different now, but that's always in my back pocket. And, again, you know, we're missing a lot. We're going to be missing a lot tonight. So, just what I want to close with this. Page 152, it's in the chapter Vision for You. You know, we go to the guy and we tell him about, we show them how we've got from under. You know, you say, yeah, I'm willing, but am I supposed to be, am I supposed to be consigned to a life where I should be stupid, boring, and glum? That's what I really was afraid of. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't tell jokes anymore. Right? Like the righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Real quick, what substitutes am I using right now? Am I using sex as a substitute? Lust as a substitute for alcohol? Am I using food or sugar as a substitute for alcohol? Am I using candy? Am I using gambling? Money? Things? Status? Business? What am I using? What am I substituting? Drugs? Pills? Right? Well, yeah. Besides all this other ridiculousness that, through my experience, only causes me more pain and misery and actually causes sometimes a lot more trouble. Yeah, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Promise. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. Well, how's this to come about? You ask. Well, where am I to find these people? All right. You're going to meet these new friends in your own community, near you. Listen. Alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there's hundreds. Mm-hmm. High and low, rich and poor, there are future fellow members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, they will be your lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with a new and wonderful ties. For you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself, that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. So, he's not saying, how am I going to come about these people? Well, go try the meeting at Westfield on Sunday night at 6:30. And if you don't like them, go check out the Westfield meeting at 8 o'clock. Right? They're not telling me to find the fellowship I crave at a meeting. They're telling me that the fellowship that I'm going to crave is going to be right where I was when I walked in here, in the gutter, in the saloon, on 42nd Street, sleeping on a park bench at Central Park, right? Hanging outside the methadone clinic. Right, that's where I'm going to find the fellowship I crave, at the detoxes, at the jails, at the institutions, right, in the rehabs. That's where I'm going to find the fellowship I crave, in the gutters, my people, at the Phish concerts, maybe even at Yankee Stadium, right? I'm going to find them there. See, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't really find the fellowship I craved. Because I didn't feel, my home group is very powerful, a lot of spiritual people, and I was always measuring up against whose spiritual life was this, that, and the other thing. And it wasn't until that I finally sat with another sicko just like me, and bada ba boom, you know, we're friends. You know, some of them left on the fourth step, some of them left on the ninth step, some of them are all the way through. Some of them leave sooner, but I found friends in those people, in working with others. You know, in the jails, in the institutions, in the gutter. Right? Those are my people. May sound crazy. And that's been my experience. Hanging around those people, hanging around their friends, and hanging around with like people-minded people who went through the steps the same way I did. I'm now, David and I, we had the same experience. We can chat about what it's like to do a quick 10-step, an 11-step, or work with a sponsee and all this other stuff. Right, we share that thing together, and now it's in finding these other people. It's at that point in time that you will know what it means to give of yourself, that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. That also is a promise. But you got to look in the sordid places. And you know what? If you do, you're going to find gold. That's it.